Chapter 6, Prophecies Concerning Moab and Ammon. The Moabites and Ammonites were descendants of Lot. The former dwelt along the eastern side of the Dead Sea, with their capital at Ar, while the latter occupied the country to the north of Moab, with the city of Rabbath or Reba as their capital. The Moabites had obtained their land by conquest of the Emims, who were a great people, and many and tall, which also were accounted giants. In a similar way, the Ammonites had dispossessed another early race of giants, called the Zamzummins, and dwelt in their stead. Now when the children of Israel were coming to the end of their 40 years' journey in the wilderness, before reaching the land of promise, they were instructed not to distress or attack either Moab or Ammon, because the Lord had given these lands to the children of Lot. But Balak, who was king of Moab at the time, seeing the Israelites covering the face of the earth over against him, sent to Mesopotamia and hired Balaam to come and curse them. However, this could not avail, as Balaam found it impossible to curse those whom the Lord had blessed, and his intentions ended only in blessing the Israelites. Balak might have spared himself and Balaam the trouble, seeing that the Lord had forbidden his chosen people to interfere with Moab. Because Moab thus sought evil against Israel, and neither they nor Ammon provided bread or water for their refreshment, the Ammonites and Moabites were alike denied an entrance into the congregation of the Lord, even to their 10th generation. Proselytes to the faith of Israel were ordinarily admitted to the congregation that worshipped the Lord, as were even the Edomites and Egyptians in their 3rd generation. But the Ammonites and Moabites were denied this, and so we find in the time of the return of the captivity from Babylon that Nehemiah separated from Israel all the mixed multitude, apparently the people of Ammon and Moab, and cast Tobiah the Ammonite with all his household stuff out of the chamber which the priest had prepared for him in the courts of the house of the Lord. Balaam, contrary to his own desires, was compelled to predict future good to Israel, and on the other hand to prophesy of evil that should overtake Moab. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab. It is true that for the wickedness of Israel, Moab and Ammon were allowed to oppress them for a season. But the Lord turned in mercy and afterwards gave them deliverance, as in the time of Ehud, one of the judges who slew Eglon, king of Moab, and destroyed about 10,000 of the Moabites, and again under the hand of Jephthah. King Saul also had conquests over Ammon and Moab, and David, from whom came the star and scepter foretold by Balaam, brought the Moabites into tribute, and they became servants to Israel. He also took Rabbah, the royal city of Ammon, and he took the king's crown from off his head, the weight whereof was a talent of gold, and with the precious stones, and it was set on David's head, and he brought forth the spoil of the city in great abundance. Moab and Ammon were both fruitful countries, particularly famous for their vineyards. So we are told of the vine of Sibmah, the shouting for their summer fruits and harvest, and the singing in their vineyards and wine presses. Moab, too, was proud and dwelt securely and at ease. We have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very proud. Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he hath settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel. Yet their trust was in their idols, and not in the God of Israel, whom they despised. Moab worshipped their god Chemosh, and Ammon caused their children to pass through the fire unto their god Molech. They both also reproached and reviled the Lord's chosen people of Israel, and at times attacked their coasts. For these things, solemn judgments were prophesied to come upon them, and we shall see how they have come true. Mention has already been made of some of the predictions which Balaam was compelled to make against them. Let us now look at some godly prophets who came later on. First of all, the prophet Amos takes up his burden against them. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of the children of Ammon, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, but I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and it shall devour the palaces thereof, with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind. And their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith the Lord. So also against Moab, I will send fire upon Moab, and it shall devour the palace of Kerioth. And Moab shall die with tumult, with shouting, and with the sound of the trumpet. And I will cut off the judge from the midst thereof, and will slay all the princes thereof with him, saith the Lord. Then, a few years after Amos, Isaiah continues the lamentable tale of woe against Moab. I will bewail with the weeping of Jazer, the vine of Sibmah. I will water thee with my tears, O Heshbon and Ilieli. For the shouting for thy summer fruits and for thy harvest is fallen, and gladness is taken away and joy out of the plentiful field. And in the vineyards there shall be no singing, neither shall there be shouting. The treaders shall tread out no new wine in their presses. I have made their vintage shouting to cease. Then Zephaniah, writing about 100 years after Isaiah, foretells their destruction for their reproaches against the Lord's people. As I live, saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah, even the breeding of nettles and salt pits, and perpetual desolation. The residue of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of the Lord of hosts. Jeremiah still further pursues these solemn threatenings of divine judgments. Against Moab, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, woe unto Nebo, for it is spoiled. Kiriathaim is confounded and taken. Mizgeb is confounded and dismayed. There shall be no more praise of Moab. In Heshbon they have devised evil against it. Come, and let us cut it off from being a nation. For because thou hast trusted in thy works and in thy treasures, thou shalt also be taken, and Chemosh shall go forth into captivity with his priests and his princes together. And the spoiler shall come upon every city, and no city shall escape. The valley also shall perish, and the plain shall be destroyed, as the Lord hath spoken. Give wings unto Moab, that it may flee and get away, for the cities thereof shall be desolate, without any to dwell therein. Woe be unto thee, O Moab! The people of Chemosh perisheth, for thy sons are taken captives, and thy daughters captives. Also against Ammon, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will cause an alarm of war to be heard in Rabbah of the Ammonites, and it shall be a desolate heap, and her daughters shall be burned with fire. Now let us see what is the condition of Moab and Ammon at the present day. The descriptions given by travelers in those parts will furnish us with an authentic account of what they have seen there. Here is the testimony of Dr. J. A. Willey, a Scottish minister, who made a tour of those regions. We are in the land of Moab, but where are the vineyards of Moab? Where are her harvests, her cities, her people? All are as completely vanished as if they had never been. How evident is it that the turf beneath our feet has not been disturbed by the plow for ages? How evident is it that in this land men neither sow nor reap, neither build houses nor plant vineyards? The whole country is covered with sward, which is green and luxuriant herbage during the winter rains, but brown and parched when the heats of summer set in, and beneath that turf slumbers a soil which, were it cultivated, would yield 100-fold. Well then, the harvests and the vintage of this land have come to an end. What has been the fate of her cities? Let her ruins testify. Wherever we go, we behold nothing but ruins. Every little eminence had its city of old. Every little eminence has its heap of ruins now. Here on this little mount on the left, you see the ruins of a temple, a gate with the edifice into which it led gone, two Corinthian columns, and in a plain a little to the west, a stone altar, but without a worshipper. This was once Ar, the capital of Moab, and as the traveler passes it by, he casts a glance on these memorials and remembers the prediction, Ar of Moab is laid waste and brought to silence. Again he says, we go forward, the path skirting the base of Dejebel Ataros, which rises on our left, the supposed Pisgah of the Scriptures. We pass the ruins of Kiriathaim, and Midaba, and Beth-Meon, and Elieli, and at last we ascend a little eminence on which we stood, in former days the beauteous Heshbon. Here, amid the few remaining memorials of Heshbon's splendor, we shall halt and take a last look at Moab. Under our eye is now a vast extent of undulating country, extending to the Jordan on the one side and to the desert on the other, its soil rivaling, nay, excelling in fertility the finest lands in Europe. Yet, the country is a wilderness. The vines that covered it are perished from its soil. The cities that beautified it have sunk into the earth. Its people, too, are extinct. And to complete its calamities, the desert has sent its children forth to perpetuate its desolation. These swarthy bands, which you see roaming over it in every direction, and which, refusing to cultivate the soil themselves, will not allow others to do so, are now the only inhabitants of Moab. I have broken Moab like a vessel wherein is no pleasure, saith the Lord. Moab is spoiled and gone up out of her cities. They shall cry, saying, how is it broken down? Also of Ammon, he bears a similar testimony. As you journey over Ammon, you behold only shepherds with their flocks. The country has become one wide fold. Every part of it is thus occupied. Its ruins, the banks of its streams, the open plain, are a couching place for flocks. And here you will note the nice distinction between the prophecy as it relates to Ammon and as it relates to the land of Chaldea. Both, at the time when the prophecy was given, were equally rich and flourishing, but it was foretold that there should be a distinction between the future desolation of each. Of Ammon it was said that it should be a land of flocks. Of Chaldea, that the shepherd's tent should not be seen upon it, and so it is now. The plain of Babylon is so utterly wasted that the shepherd's tent is never seen upon it, but the fields of Ammon are still depastured by flocks. Again he writes, but how are the ruins of Rabbah now occupied? Exactly as the prophet foretold. The hollow valley, the stream, and the sheltering walls are strong attractions for the Bedouins. They drive their camels down hither by hundreds, not only to drink, but to be stabled in the ruins. The place, Lord Lindsay informs us, has an intolerable stench from the bones and carcasses of dead camels that lie rotting in it, and the valley is covered everywhere with their litter. Thus do camels dwell where princes once dwelt. I will make Rabbah a stable for camels. Another traveler in those parts, Dr. J. L. Porter, gives the following account. The plain of Bashan stretches out on the west to Hermon, the plain of Moab on the south to the horizon, and the plain of Arabia on the east beyond the range of vision. For more than an hour I sat gazing on that vast panorama. Wherever I turned my eyes, town and villages were seen. Bozrah was there on its plain, 12 miles distant. The towers of Beth Gamel were faintly visible far away on the horizon. In the vale immediately to the south of Salca are several deserted towns whose names I could not ascertain. From this one spot I saw upwards of 30 deserted towns. Well might I exclaim with the prophet, as I sat on the ruins of this great fortress and looked over the mournful scene of utter desolation, Moab is spoiled and gone up out of their cities. Moab is confounded, for it is broken down. Howl and cry, tell ye it in Arnon, that Moab is spoiled, and judgment is come on the plain country, upon Kiriathaim, and upon Beth Gamel, and upon Beth Meon, and upon Kirioth, upon Bozrah, and upon all the cities of the land of Moab, far and near. Another feature of the landscape impressed me still more deeply. Not only is the country, plain and hillside alike, checkered with fenced fields, but groves of fig trees are here and there seen, and terraced vineyards still clothe the sides of some of the hills. These are neglected and wild, but not fruitless. Mahmud tells us that they produce great quantities of figs and grapes, which are rifled year after year by the Bedouins in their periodical raids. How literal and how true have the words of Jeremiah become. O vine of Sibmah, I will weep for thee with the weeping of Jazer. The spoiler is fallen upon thy summer fruits, and upon thy vintage. And joy and gladness is taken from the plentiful field and from the land of Moab. And I have caused wine to fail from the wine presses. None shall tread with shouting. In the whole of these vast plains, north and south, east and west, desolation reigns supreme. The cities, the highways, the vineyards, the fields are all alike silent as the grave, except during the periodical migrations of the Bedouins, whose flocks, herds, and people eat, trample down, and waste all before them. The long-predicted doom of Moab is now fulfilled. The best, the fullest, the most instructive commentary I ever saw on the 48th of Jeremiah was that inscribed by the finger of God on the panorama spread out around me as I stood on the battlements of the castle of Salcah.